Another term, Ajahn, that people have a lot of problems with is sasankarika, asankarika, cheetahs, which usually we translate as strong and weak. For example, the kusala can be strong kusala or weak when really urged to do something by someone. And the way that it's usually translated in English, I don't know about Thai, but in English it's usually translated as prompted and unprompted. So when we mention strong and weak, people have difficulty with that. And when I look at the examples in the text, like the examples of the child that may naturally be pleased to hear about the Dharma or see the bhikkhus, that's asankarika, but when they only behave like this and give something to the monk, then it's sasankarika. So it sounds like prompted and unprompted to them, because the example makes it sound like it's prompted by the others.
What about lunch? Just a few moments ago, sasankari or asankari? Or do we have to look at the book?
Yes, well, depending on, you mean the attachment or anything, or the understanding,
chitta
or
arises
any chitta?
And falls away in with seconds.
So many, yes.
So it can be moment of asankari and sasankari, that's
yes,
all?
Yes, that's all. Mm-hmm. So different moments, sometimes strong, sometimes weak, sometimes encouraged, sometimes not. So we can just think of the Pali and not mind.
The moment.
The moment, yes.
So, Sarah, your question was that the use of, strong and weak to show the difference between prompted and unprompted is misleading, or what?
Well, Ajahn doesn't like the use of prompted and unprompted, which you use usually, like for quite a long time, we've been using strong and weak, and we've talked about changing this, like in Nina's writing or our own writing, because sometimes it's strong, sometimes it's weak. This is the meaning of sasankarika and asankarika. So, for example, one naturally is generous and gives, but other times only when it's really suggested by others, then one gives. So sometimes it's stronger and sometimes it's weaker. But when I look at the examples in the text, I can understand why people use the examples prompted and unprompted, because there are many examples of being urged by others. So this is just a question about which translation is more appropriate, why we only use strong and weak and not prompted and unprompted.
But the word sasankarika and asankarika is actually strong and weak, not, I know, prompted and unprompted, rather than strong and weak.
Well,
no?
That's your idea, but Ajahn
doesn't
the
use...
The meaning of the...
In the text, they always say...
What's the meaning of asankarika and sasankarika?
Okay, you just don't want to go to see the cinema at all. But when someone asks you to go...
I understand.
That's sasankarika.
Right. Yeah, strong or weak, before that. When
so prompted is weak.
Well, forget about the prompted. Unprompted, because at that moment it may not be prompted, but when you don't really want to go, but you go, then that is sasankarika. But when you, when you really just want to go by yourself, then it's asankarika.
No, I understand the examples, but what prompted the use of these two words?
No matter it's prompted or not prompted, citta at that moment is weak or strong to do.
Why then the Abhidhamma uses those two words?
Because it's clear, it's easy to understand.
Oh, it's like an example.
But actually I think that asankarik and satsankarik is the translation for the word prompted or unprompted. But, okay, so should we just follow the word or consider the citta? What kind of citta?
Because at the moment itself, because for me a question arises when you say prompted or unprompted, which citta are you referring to? Because the citta arises Kusla or Kusla is just that chitta with so many chetasikas, and prompted prior to it is another something else. So if you're referring to the actual chitta between strong and weak, is there's no idea prompted or unprompted.
We can ask Kun Oen whether her chitta is strong or weak to come to listen to the here. See? When she came because of Kun El asked her, and what about chitta at that moment? Or she'd like very much to come, but no one asked her yet.
And even then, even when coming at different moments, so maybe not so enthusiastic to come, so it might have been weak, but then when coming, maybe very interested, and it may be strong, and another time it's all complicated and confusing, so weak again, so different moments. So I think that the problem with prompting and unprompting is, again, one can think in terms of the situation, whereas actually it's about the citta at each moment. So when one looks at the eight kinds of lobha, for example, some are sasankarika, some are asankarika, then it's not talking about a long story about whether someone asked you to come or told you to go to the cinema or whatever. It's talking about the citta at that moment.
Okay. So when Kun Sarah, Kun Jonathan, everyone thinks of coming here, strong or weak. And when someone listened to the teachings to the radio, through the radio, it depends on no attention, no intention to hear at all. But later, see, after hearing, strong. It is sankharik or sankharik, see? The word, the person, the radio does not ask you to have interest in it. But it's by hearing itself. So I don't think that we should think much about to be asked to do that is sankharik.
No, I'm not thinking, because I think it's a long story about, you know, some situation being prompted, unprompted, being suggested by someone to do this and or doing it on your own. That's a long story. And I agree.
It's not only a long story, but the citta is really very hard to understand.
One assumes it was strong interest to come, but actually when I woke up and I wasn't feeling well and tired from the journey and so many different moments. So it just depends on the citta. Because when one classifies lobha as strong or weak, but we know there are so many shades and degrees of lobha, but it's just a classification. It's a bit like classifying visible object as desirable, yeah, undesirable, but actually sometimes just a tiny bit desirable, mm-hmm, or sometimes very undesirable. Or so.
For example, when I offered a salad to Kun Sarah, it depends on her accumulation. She likes it very much that she would like it, but it does mean that she'd take it because I just ask her whether she'll take it or not. So,
okay.
No use to think about.
Now I forget my basic Abhidhamma, but the question is, so is all chittas either prompted or unprompted? Kusla or Kusla chittas, either prompted or unprompted?
Kusla or Kusla, Akusla.
Kusla or Akusla, they're either
not
prompted or unprompted.
Not included the Mohabuli chitta.
Mohabuli chitta.
See,
okay.
So we...
And they're all one of them.
Yeah. They cannot be a sankhari,
mm-hmm,
or sasankhari.
The lobha or weak? The lobha can be strong or weak, like there can be very strong attachment or just a little bit of attachment. So some attachments are strong and some are weak, so this is the point. And this is what these terms are referring to. Some understanding is strong, some is weak.
So when she'd like to have it, and I just offer her, it is a sankharik or a sankharik, because she wants it, she likes it, but no one helped her yet.
Mm.
So it's actually for every moment, after seeing, after hearing, after thinking, in thinking, it, that the citta is either asankarika or sasankarika. After not, the sense door project.
Not necessary to find out.
Not moha, except moha, as you say.
Or what about seeing?
No, vipaka, of course not. I said after. After seeing, after hearing, after smelling, the thinking that follows, if it's not moha, then it's prompted or unprompted.
Kunsukin? Can you tarry?
No, but is it in...
But
in,
when you think in terms of strong or weak, you can know whether you like it or not, or it's just you like so much. Even no one asks you, you find by yourself that it's asankari.
Right. And that's the way to know, but according to the text, that's what it is, either prompted or...
That's unprompted. Why we have to consider the word in the text, like the chanda, see, or chetana coordination.
And when one realizes, for example, every moment of attachment is strong or weak, so then when one reads about the examples which seem to be like prompting and unprompting, but one realizes this is just... examples, because most moments of attachment, like now, no one's suggesting anything, but actually it's still strong or weak. Yeah. So that helps.
And by way of the jhana, is it sasankarik or asankarik?
No idea.
There are many meanings, many ways of understanding the words of the teaching. Without Mahakusala, which arises before, the jhana cannot arise. So some say jhana is sasankarika, because without the moments of mahakusala or mahakriya, it cannot arise. It needs that. See, but what is it, strong or weak?
It has to be strong if it's jhana.
So yeah. It doesn't make sense
so
that it...
Another meaning of sankhari is that there must be other chittas which condition it.
I see. But if one refers to that actual, those actual chittas, the, for example, the understanding at the level of mundane jhana, then it has to be the asankharika.
That's why we have to understand whether it's strong or weak. Better than thinking about whether it's prompted or unprompted.
Right, must be strong. So they must all be classified as
asankarika. There are something underlying.
I see.
That you have to find out.
Okay.
When you heard the word sasankari, it doesn't mean that you have to follow, that it must be prompted. But you have to think many things to understand it as really what it is.
So it can be referring to what it is conditioned by, like conditioned as a base or support for, or like the...
And in what aspect it's about.
Trouble and what...
Like mahakusala must arise before the jhana, so that is another thing. So just one word we have to think in order to really understand the nature of Dhamma.
Actually, whichever aspect one's talking about, it has
to refer to the conditioned nature of different cheetahs.
And it changed too, from being prompted to unprompted, see? And who knows for now, prompted or unprompted. If you like it very much, no one asked you to like it very much. So it's unprompted, but when someone says it's so nice and you like it, see? Prompted or unprompted, because you like it, no matter who tell you what about it. And do you think that this is the right way to understand the teachings?
No, I was just thinking, Achan, that rather than think about strong or weak, I mean, when we hear these things and don't have enough understanding, it just causes speculation, a lot of speculation. So maybe it's not helpful to think.
So one shouldn't forget that we hear all this just to understand that there is no one. That's all. not just try to find out this, that is the wrong study of Abhidhamma. Just think about that and think more and more about it, what it's here and now. We just learn Abhidhamma in details to really understand that actually there's no self, only that. And then it will bring more and more understanding about whatever appears now. Because the truth is understand what appears now.
Your mention of jhana reminded me of this other point in Nina's writing that I think can also cause some confusion, which is a quote from what you say. The discussion was about meditation and ideas of seclusion and trying to concentrate on something special. And she wrote, "It's true, if one wants to cultivate calm to the degree of jhana, one has to live a secluded life and one has to use a meditation subject of samatha. But the point is that no one understands what seclusion is, what samatha is, what jhana is. So if one hears or reads that, if one has the idea of seclusion and concentration and attaining jhana, and if one reads that it's true, if one wants to cultivate calm to the degree of jhana, one has to lead a secluded life and one has to use a meditation subject of samatha, like our friends."
That's
right. It encourages them to think this is the right way.
That's right. We just read without understanding. For example, what is meant by seclusion? See, no understanding yet, just follow the word by one's own thinking.
Mm-hmm. So rather than suggest that people talk without understanding about that, it is then, and you know, point out that it is more important to understand each word. Right? Whatever we talk, jhana or seclusion, understand each word.
The point is, if one says that, Vipassana means developing of understanding now in daily life, but it's true that if you want to develop samatha to jhana, you need to find a quiet, secluded place and select an object of calmness, then it's not understanding anything about the conditioned nature of reality at this moment, and it's not understanding anything about what calm is. Calm doesn't mean going to a quiet place and choosing an object of calmness. That's not the way to, that leads to jhana. So it can lead, so it's true that as one is about to attain jhana, if, like in the old days, then it is an object of samatha and it is the quiet place. But if someone today would decides they would like to develop calm to the degree of jhana and thinks they should find a quiet place and choose an object of samatha, actually there's no understanding at all.
I mean, the main thing is that what is the path the Buddha taught? And that's what we need to understand from the beginning. And if he mentioned jhana, it wasn't, about it as being a factor of the path, a part of the path. So he taught the path and he taught to understand everything. And it's understanding. Understanding is what his teachings is about. So he talked about dosa, he talked about lobha, he talked about jhana. It's all for understanding, to be understood as it is. Not for doing or not to anything.
That's why when there is no understanding at all, and read the text, one read with one own thought, no understanding of what it's meant.
And if one likes the idea of doing in practice, then one is encouraged to read this with the idea that, oh yes, I can go to the secluded temple somewhere and choose an object, and this is a way that will lead to more calmness.
And then, but then again, if someone likes the idea so much, then no matter how much you try to convince it, they're not going to be convinced. Even when you suggest that the Buddha taught about encourage understanding everything that appears now, they just don't want to hear. They still want to think that the Buddha taught to do something.
Even reading the Buddha's words just for wanting for oneself to have right understanding, that's wrong.
And that's what Sarah was trying to find out this morning. You know, it can come in any time. That's why she said, don't come here to understand or anything. It can, the idea of self can come in, right? That's what you're trying to find out in.
So
but then again, you often remind us that understanding, for the sake of understanding.
Without understanding, how can there be the elimination of the idea of self? Just know nothing and read the teachings and think that it is that and this is not right. Because they just want to read, just want to understand, not realizing that the words of the Buddha just for letting go everything, but not by just oneself try to let go. It's impossible, not possible at all.
That's the way it has to be at all. If it's not satyayan, then there's still that idea of self.
Yeah.
Because after all, it's what's to be understood is what appears now, and until Pandya is developed to that level that realize that it is this, what appears now needs to be understood, then there will be this idea of doing something or trying to catch realities.
And the main point is that right now there are no people here, there is no Ajahn. There is just Citta, Chetasika and Rupa, just like at any other moment. That's the main point. Otherwise one always thinks in terms of good and bad situations and forgets about this moment.
And the point is, there is no one, nothing. This will lead gradually to letting go, attachment.
Yes.
Because actually there's no one, there's nothing, if nothing arises.
People who come here new and who don't understand, or who've heard many and don't understand, they question why anatta is stressed so much, is emphasized so much. But that's the beginning, isn't it, Ajahn? From the beginning, it has to be emphasized that there is no self, just tamas.
A lot of people think
there is nothing.
Because without that understanding that there is no self, then the idea of self will come in, and you cannot understand Dhamma with self, with the idea of self.
And when the idea of nothing hasn't been in one's mind yet, there must be the something all the time. Nothing means nothing at all. Because before becoming this, nothing. And each moment is nothing, because it's gone, never to return. Actually, there's nothing, because from nothing, there's something, and then nothing again. Like nothing from the very beginning. So this is the tamadha in Thai, but it means the nature of reality. Just arise and falls away all the time. No one can stop the way it is. And wrong understanding is there too. Arising and falling away, taking all which appears as something. Like now, see, everything is just like now.
this is actually the answer to another point she asked me to raise, which is about rupas. There was a question on an old tape about the purpose of understanding the theory about rupas in groups, and one point was knowing more about the conditionality of the different rupas and how they condition one another. And you mentioned other benefits which she couldn't follow, so she asked you to say more. But I think the whole point of understanding about different rupas or how they condition each other is to just show that there's nothing there at all, that there are just those dhammas, that's it. Any other benefits
of
understanding rupas in groups and how they condition each other?
What about just understanding, not in group?
The same. Just understanding anything about the nature of reality. I think the point came because there was a question about why, and this might be Uwen's question, like visible object is seen now, but visible object doesn't arise alone. It has to arise with other rupas together in a group which condition it. That's why each rupa, each visible object seen is different, because it's conditioned by the earth element and the temperature, other rupas that arise together with it in a group. And the question was about what the purpose is of knowing these details, and apart from understanding how each one conditions the other in the group, then, and how it shows how it's not in anyone's control. No one can make those rupas arise. She just asked if you had anything more to say about other benefits.
Anything else about that? The benefit is just no one, no self, nothing. Nothing. If there is something, it must be the object of attachments, unknowingly. But when nothing, see, only that which arises and falls away and never to return all the time, right? Like now.
The point is that if we just hear that seeing sees visible object, it's not enough to really eradicate the idea of something that is seen or someone that's seeing. So the point of considering more details and hearing more about those realities is in order to really be confident, to really understand that there is no cup, there is no one there, that there are just these different realities arising and falling away by conditions.
But at times there can also be the idea of groups as something.
It does matter as long as that group is not self. For example, at moment of experiencing a characteristic, just one can be experienced while the others cannot be experienced.
And when one falls away, the other also falls away.
In succession.
No, together in the group.
So actually, since there is Khun Sukhin, our friend here, we like him, see. But when there is no Sukhin, no object to like, to be object of liking, see, nothing. And actually it's nothing. And that can be known, otherwise Buddha would not teach at all.
As you say, actually it's nothing, but mana, lopa, titi arises because there's no understanding of that.
No understanding of paccaya, which no one can stop or take it away. It's there when it arises and fall away instantly, never to return. That means nothing is there as object of what it's like before. Otherwise, there cannot be the eradication of the idea of self at all. It's accumulated so long, long, long time. So the one who does not understand reality cannot read Tipitaka with understanding. For example, the one who has wrong motivation of reading sutta, take everything for self. For example, parami or being persevere or with viriya, they think that they will try from now on. That's not what Buddha taught. The viriya is to really consider, to understand the word of the Buddha about whatever appears, and begins to understand little by little about that as not self. So whatever what is heard is not self. The way it is, it's just conditioned. That's all.
Then when you said that those who read the sutta without the understanding reality, there's no way to understand, I was thinking that's because inevitably they will take concept for reality. Is that the same as what you said later, that there's the idea of self? Taking concept for reality, is it the same as the idea of self?
Taking anything for self. Not just only concepts.
And there's no refuge in that. It's unsatisfactory. That in nothing, there's no refuge in nothing.
Understanding.
In understanding, and the Dhamma is the refuge.
Then why do you say there's refuge in the Dhamma? In the
understanding.
Because how
understanding
can,
also
how
just rises
can you
and falls
understand with reality right now?
But there's no
depending on the words of the Buddha. So the words of the Buddha is the refuge. Dhamma, Buddha, Sangha.
Because it's only that development of understanding of reality now that leads to the way out of samsara. That's why that's the only refuge, the triple gem, nothing else. So even though those dharmas arise and fall away, it is that the right understanding that leads to the path that leads out of samsara.
When you are sick, do you have any refuge?
Medicine.
So what about the kilesa? To cure, to have less.
Panya.
So dhamma is refuge.
Usually when we refer to kilesa, we are referring to all kinds of defilements, but actually there are only 10 which are kilesa. So some like machari and isa, which are akusala, but not kilesa.
We talk about the main
ones. Mm-hmm. And what is the reason that all defilements are not kilesa? Is it because they just depend on other ones?
The Buddha used the term akusala dhamma.
Yes. So.
And there are how many cetasikas which are akusala dhamma?
Yes. And
when we talk about kilesa,
just referring to some of them, yes.
And includes that too, because what is left is only that which arises with the main.
The main ones, yes, like isa or something arise with the main, yes.
So Ken, your question about panya as a refuge is because it's a mental factor arises and falls away?
No, it was in the context of everything.
There's nothing. So even panya arises to just...
That's right. It's dukkha.
I have a question. I've been reading Survey of Paramatta Dhammas recently, and more and more awareness of akusala, the danger of akusala, and to I don't know how to phrase this, to cultivate kusala, what is done is listening to the Dhamma, associating with my Dhamma friends, and wise consideration, reflecting on what has been heard and discussed. And I think, oh, that's not enough. I just see the danger of it.
What more? More kilesa. When there's no understanding. And you know about asava? Asava.
Intoxicants.
Oh, right.
I had that
confused.
Yes.
Asava.
Asava
intoxicants. Yeah. See,
is there
now? Yes. See? So, yes. There must be dipdasava if one have accumulated lots of it in a day. But when there's understanding and no thinking about my, me, then it's just attachment without wrong understanding. And it is kamasava. You cannot be freed of the asava.
That's common attachment to sense objects, completely unknown, like now.
Yes, yes, precisely. Three moments. The thoughts that came, delicious food, beautiful color, landscape,
before,
intoxicant.
Even before that.
Yes.
Attachments.
Only so three strong. Moments after seeing, it's there.
So strong.
By its nature.
And why would you like to have more kusala and less akusala?
That's a trick question. It's all loaded with self and attachment.
So is there any use in wanting to
have more kusala, less akusala?
And when there's minding about the akusala that arises and wishing it were another way, what kind of citta is it?
Oh, akusala, more.
So one can see that clinging to self is so strong. So it's one thing to begin to see the value of understanding begin to see the value of metta at this moment. It's quite another thing to want to have more metta or want to be the kind person. This is not any understanding or developing of metta or understanding. So actually it's only understanding that begins to appreciate what is kusala and what is akusala. And so much of what we take for being kusala is actually akusala, such as when there's trying to be the kind person or wanting to be the nice person. Instead of appreciating that actually whatever's arisen, kusala, akusala, vipaka, whatever it is just a passing dharma of no significance. Not my attachment that's so terrible or anything. It's just a passing dharma and it's gone immediately.
Otherwise there
cannot be any development of detachment because it's minding all the time what arises and what appears.
Attachment to dosa.
Attachment to anything at all. Anything except akutra dharmas. One who has the dosa.
There's one table, one discussion
where Jan's saying, I don't mind at all when it's dosa, even strong dosa, because it's just a dharma, it's just a conditioned dharma.
It's not necessary to be so wrapped up in the concept of self. Just dhammas, as you said so nicely.
Nina also said she would like to hear more about darkness. When vipassana jnana arises, the world is dark, there's no light. It's not sound, it's not light. It's only that which experiences, must be talking about seeing or the understanding, just that which experiences. And you often refer to darkness, but she's not sure she understands this. We take it for granted that there is light now. This is because visible object keeps on appearing. But the usual sense objects do not appear, only the reality that experiences. Question. Also, visible object falls away, but it seems it continues, that light continues. So I think she would like to hear more about darkness. So actually, the first part was, it's true, even at a moment of right understanding, the nama itself arises in darkness, and at that moment of understanding, the world is dark. It's only at a moment of seeing that an invisible object appears that light appears. And because visible object arises often, it seems that there is light often. But then she asks a question, but the usual sense objects do not appear, only the reality that experiences. I think she means when there is panya, or a moment of vipassana, jnana. So at that moment, the world is dark. But actually, it's just like now, if visible object's not being experienced, then it is dark at that moment. But the point is, now it's not clear because there's not understanding, so it seems that there's light and it seems that there's sound all the time. So anyway, this is what she would like to hear more about.
This is the difference between the process of seeing and the other process.
And only at the level of vipassana jnana can that be seen.
But actually, to be understanding at that level, it has to develop now. So even now, when there is understanding of hardness or dosa, actually there's no light appearing. At that moment, there's no thought or idea of it, the world being light at that moment. So the understanding develops. It's not like it's anything different from now. If it's not visible object, it's not light.
I think understanding at that level would not, for example, know that seeing is not light, for example, right? Just having satipatthana. But if it is vipassana jnana, then it knows the difference between seeing and visible object, that light is visible object and seeing is not light. So seeing is dark. If you're saying like now, even when there's seeing, there's not always the idea of or thinking. There's not the idea of light. Or even at seeing, there's not the idea of light. There's just seeing, right, and
if
thinking.
If it is direct understanding now, not even vipassana jnana, then when the characteristic of seeing is known, there's no impression or idea or thought of light at that moment, because it's just that characteristic of seeing that is known. So the understanding has to develop until it's really clear. So it has to be known and appear, but it only appears really well when it is vipassana jnana, but it develops.
But Chan, what do you mean when you often say that actually it's dark most of the time? What do you mean?
Yeah, because when it is direct experience with right understanding of reality. For example, we talk about the nama as that which experience. Keep on saying that. At moment of seeing, it experiences that which is seen. At moment of hearing, but it does not appear as it is.
So when does it appear?
Vipassana jnana. The first vipassana jnana. Because it's the distinction between the nama and rupa, clearly.
Just one thing to add, and I'll pass the mic, that I think what Ajahn says is that, for example, seeing arises in darkness. So it's not as though she's saying that when there's awareness of seeing, there is darkness. It's dark is different from saying that seeing arises in darkness.
It's all dhammas appear in darkness.
Yeah.
All dhammas appear in darkness.
It's just something to consider. It doesn't mean the world goes dark when there's some awareness of dhammas.
Right. Or that it's just like that
of vipassana,
and only then the world
goes dark. Is that what you mean every time you mention dark, the darkness of
right now,
chitta?
Right now. That which is seen is not seen. And we keep on saying that nama has no shape, form, color, smell, taste, just arise to experience. So can it be light, sweet, like other?
So you're just saying that only one dhamma is light, that's visible object. Is that the meaning?
Only one.
So it actually is exactly like now. So when understanding begins to develop now, it begins to know that reality as it is, that it cannot be the light one, because it's the nama that experiences. But it has to develop until it's really clear at that moment.
And that moment is only panya begins to see, to understand the meaning of experiencing. The reality which just arises to experience.
And why you particularly like to mention light and dark is because, unlike hearing and tasting, it seems that there's light all the time.
Yeah.
And because there's the most attention to visible object, because it's so common. And after that, sound. So actually it seems that the sound lasts a long time or goes on, or that the bird is chirping for a long time. Not as much as the visible object, but after that then sound.
We have the idea.
That's why the Buddha always starts with the idle process.
Have the idea of living in a world of light and sunshine and darkness at night and light again in the morning.
And also when you hear, close your eyes and hear, hear sounds, you're imagining in terms of what's seen, what could would
right.
be.
Yeah. So much attention to what
interest in the visible world.
So the nama can be directly experienced by panya only of that degree. It doesn't mean that from reading it does not, it will never appear, but from reading and understanding it is building up. The understanding of that which one heard all the time about its experience only.
Sarah was suggesting it's like now, it's no different from now. That's how it has to be. If it's a moment of understanding, direct understanding, there must be also the understanding that seeing, for example, is not light, and sound is not light, hearing is not light.
So it's just removing the veil of ignorance. It's not like it's anything different from this moment.
As if something,
getting new lenses.
As if something's been discovered.
And that's why it says that the characteristic of panya is to illuminate. So it's like turning on the light in the room and illuminating what is there. It's not that what is there is any different from now, but now it's not illuminated.
When one is in dark room, it's dark, but not as dark as the reality which experiences it, because it knows darkness, which is dark, but that which experiences is darker. Nothing, it begins to see the world in different way, the world as it is. They come together in the sudden, many people and things all around. But when it's panya of that degree, it understands one reality as it is, only one at a time. So the characteristic of rupa or nama is so clear. Because there's no table, no thing, no people, but only that which has its characteristic to be such and such. it can be known, otherwise Buddha didn't teach, if no one can know. But it can be known. But it's so very, very hard, because it's not I who develop it. It depends on conditions from now on. No place, no secluded place, no teacher, no words can help that moment to arise. Only one's own understanding from hearing, considering, understanding the nature of it, that the I who is now understanding it cannot make it arise, cannot make anything to be at all, just only by condition. So it needs Panya, to be patient, with patience. And one begins to understand what patience means. No self, no one. No matter how long or short.
And it's just the same as
having confidence in what the Buddha said about there being no Satyana. Self and what are the factors for developing understanding.
Moment ago we were talking about kusala and akusala and understanding dharmas as dharmas, not as self. But a friend often mentions that Ajahnu say, oh, kusala and akusala aren't known at all, because usually it's taken for my dosa, my panya, my understanding. But gradually understanding can begin to develop. What appears now is just Dharma, and can begin to understand when it is kusala and when it's not, but mostly it's just thinking about an idea of kusala and akusala, and I have metta or don't have metta or something like this. So understanding has to develop, as you say. If it wasn't possible, the Buddha wouldn't have taught it.
So, Sarah, would you say that just in the same way that someone who has not heard the Dhamma can distinguish between what's right and wrong, although it's not as Dhamma, but in terms of wrong deeds and good deeds and bad deeds, and knowing anger is wrong, there can be gradually right understanding that knows, begins to know in terms of them being realities, right? So there's not like only after you develop Panya to a certain level that you understand kusala. It can be from, it must be actually from the very beginning. Mm-hmm.
Like if there isn't the beginning of understanding these different dharmas as dharmas and how they are anatta now, and if there's not the beginning of understanding what is kusala and what is akusala, then there cannot be the direct understanding, satipatthana. So there has to be the beginning of understanding, and that's the point of the considering and the wise reflection. And if there wasn't the development of satipatthana, then there could never be vipassana jnana, there could never be the clear understanding of namas and rupas and the distinction and the world of darkness and so on. So, but the understanding has to develop.
And I'm reminded about Ajahn sometimes referring to barami of barami, because when it's barami, it's understanding the reality as not self. But when it's barami of marami, it's just appreciating kusala, the value of kusala. And so, yeah, that understanding is there also.
And that's why there are degrees of paramis and pre-paramis and paramis, and it has to grow, it has to develop.
John, talking about
the Pasnanyana, another point and quote of yours which I commented about in the text was that I mentioned that several times the text refers to Ajahn discussing knowing the difference between sense door and mind door, and when the mind door appears. And I mentioned that this is just a kind of shorthand referring to Vipassana Jnana and the clear understanding of realities appearing through the mind door. But if one just talks about, oh, knowing the difference between sense door and mind door, people may be confused because they don't know what you mean by sense door and mind door. For example, one friend used to think that whenever you referred to mind door in this context, you were referring to the last Bhavanga Chitta before the mind door process. And I mentioned, no, you're talking to those dharmas which appear through the mind door. And so when you mention about discussing knowing the difference between sense door and mind door, and when the mind door appears, can you clarify more what you mean?
It's the mind door now.
Yes.
It's hidden. Lots of mind door.
Mind door processes.
Yeah. Because you see that only one moment of seeing.
Yes.
And the process of seeing, very short. Compared to the mind door process.
Yeah.
So when the truth is there, what is true?
Well, the truth is that at the moment of seeing, as you say, is very short, the sense door process is very short, and the countless moments of thinking and being lost in stories and experiencing concepts, as we discussed
so
this morning.
So one of the difference between Vipassana Jnana and when it's not.
Yes.
So the difference is that it's very clear that actually most of the time, like now, there is thinking in darkness about different nimitta and concepts and ideas, and that the moment of seeing is gone instantly.
And it's so clear that actually there's no one and nothing at all, only that which appears that can be object of vipassana. Very clear understanding.
That kind of understanding also during Satipatthana, that there is no one, just that.
From the very beginning of being Satipatthana to the moment of experiencing Nibbana, Satipatthana all the way.
So prior to Vipassana Jnana,
before Pativeda, there must be Patipati.
Patipati.
Before Katayana, there must be Kichayana, which is Satipatthana.
So at that moment also, is it not the understanding, as you said just now, that there is just that Dhamma knows?
Without Satipatthana, there is no way for Vipassana Jnana to arise, to appear.
The point is that even when it's moments of
Satipatthana, when it's direct understanding of realities, for example, if it's understanding of dosa or seeing or hearing or other reality, there's no idea that it's visible object or idle process all the time.
When it's Satipatthana, it is the beginning of understanding a reality by conditions.
Yes.
But it's so short.
It's so short.
So
short,
it's not like Vipassana
Jnana. Occasional, it's not.
But I don't know that really,
when there is some beginning of understanding, I don't know really that it does seem that it's sensed or processed all the time. It seems to me that most of the time one is lost in the world of thinking and the world of stories, and this seems to actually be much more common. Because the thinking is the thinking that seems to go on for a long time,
but
rather than
the actual reality does not appear.
Yes.
So clear.
So it's just
so
an idea
yeah.
about it. Mm-hmm. That's the difference.
Yes, that's the thing that you're saying. So is the mind where it's so active and the thoughts so fast and so many.
So common. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
lost in thought and words, thinking about that.
So it seems like thinking like this, okay, it is lost in the world of darkness and the ideas, but the difference is that it's an idea about it. It's not the direct understanding of different realities through the mind or one after the other.
Yes, it's a different quality altogether from wise reflecting, from consideration.
This is why understanding has to develop from pariyatti to patipatti to patibheda. Like the point before, it's just like now, it's not like it's anything different, but the understanding isn't clear, that's the point. Because I think it's not enough just to say there's knowing the difference between sense door and mind door, not knowing between sense door and mind door, because people have no idea what is meant by sense door or mind door, so we need to explain it.
If Satipatthana does not arise yet, nobody can know. But when Satipatthana is there, Panya knows. Otherwise, it cannot be Satipatthana. By conditions.
Okay. I'd just like to come back to the subject of characteristic of Dhamma that we discussed this morning. It seems to me that if we talk about the characteristic of a Dhamma, we must be talking about something that is common to all instances of the same Dhamma.
Can it be changed?
The characteristic? No. The characteristic is something that doesn't change.
Lopa cannot be changed. Whenever it arises, it's right. Attached.
Yes, so that is the characteristic of lopa. So whether it's strong or weak attachment, whether it's attachment to sense object or to other object or whatever,
to Dhamma.
It's still...
Or to Dhamma.
Or to Dhamma, for example. It still has the characteristic of being attached, and that is its characteristic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Never change.
Never change. So the same would apply to...
All Dhammas.
Visible object or sound.
Or Dhammas.
Thank you.
And that reminds me of another point or question, which was each visible object which is conditioned by the same condition, for example, temperature, is exactly the same. So the nimitta of the visible object, well, that nature, that particular characteristic, and the kind of visible object, that because it was conditioned by the same condition, the same temperature, is the same, or the rupa that is conditioned by the same karma, the eye sense conditioned by the same karma, will be the same. So the nimitta is the nimitta of that, exactly the same one. But if it's a visible object that is conditioned by different temperature, or the eye sense conditioned by a different karma, then its nature will be different. And so the nimitta of those countless eye senses will be different from the other one. Is that correct?
For example, clean face and then dots,
yes,
by temperature.
Yes. So the one that is conditioned by temperature, all the ones conditioned by the same temperature, it will be the sign, the nimitta of exactly the same visible object, because everything's the same, but the visible object that's a little bit different because it was conditioned by a different temperature, the sign will be different of those visible
Whatever
objects.
Arises must be conditioned.
Yeah. And the point we were discussing this morning about dreams and concepts and nimitta, I had a note from last time when you said that in a dream there is concept with nimitta, the concept makes known, and there can be a dream without concept, just nimitta. It depends on whether there is concept with it. Can you talk about the difference between dream with and without concept? So...
Always with concept,
because
in a dream.
Right, because what you said, or what I thought you said, was dream without concept, just the nimitta, and it depends on whether there is concept with it or not.
Concept is that which is made known by
yes.
nimitta. So there must be nimitta.
Yes.
There cannot be concept without nimitta.
Right, but can there be nimitta of in a dream without concept?
Nimitta without dream?
In a dream, can there be nimitta appearing without concept?
What do you mean by concept?
Well, I was just repeating what you said because I didn't understand it, because you said there's
all concept.
Dream without concept, just nimitta, and it depends whether there's concept with it or not. No.
Because you see that there are nimittas now. Right? So do you think of anyone?
Yes.
At moment of thinking of something that is concept.
Concept, yes.
Well, now there are nimittas.
Right, so not always so nimitta, but not always thinking of something. But in a dream, so it's the same. Sometimes it's just nimitta, but you mean when you say no concepts, it means no thinking about something.
But usually in a dream there must be thinking.
Exactly.
And concept.
Yes.
Otherwise we wouldn't call a dream.
That was why it kind of sounded a bit strange.
But also there can be nimitta without concept in a dream like now.
Is there nimitta now?
There
many
is nimitta.
Nimittas?
There is more nimitta than concept.
And when it's concept, it makes known.
So, same in a dream, many nimittas and concept.
Without concept, without thinking, can it be a dream?
No. But without nimitta, there cannot be thinking.
So, there must be thinking. Otherwise, it is seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching.
No, what I meant is without nimitta, there cannot be concept.
Right.
Mm. So, there must be nimitta every time there's concept. So in a dream, if there's concept, there must be nimitta also. And there may be nimitta without concept, because there's no attention, no particular thinking about anything, just a blur, as you might think in terms of.
I remember what you gave an example of one time, was you talked about, for example, in a dream, there may be the nimitta and the thinking about, for example, the lunch one had yesterday. So there is the thinking about it. But if it's something that hasn't happened, like one's going on a trip and it hasn't happened, so actually there's no nimitta of it or no idea about it, but one's thinking about it, but there isn't an idea of it.
Well, one is dreaming and someone touched a person. That person might think about something from that touch.
Mm.
Different story.
Yeah.
Or sound.
Like
scene.
When the alarm clock goes off, first of all you think it's part of the dream.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also just the wonders. Just the wonders.
Dreaming is not the wonder.
Yeah. And then back to the thinking again.
No, I think what Eve is saying is there must be right now, bhavangas in between, even while dreaming, right? That's what you're saying.
Because what is dreaming is not bhavanga.
And it happens in processes.
And you mentioned sometime that in the development of samatha, there's no understanding of nimitta, so they develop something to have other nimitta. For example, in samatha bhavana, you said there's no understanding of nimitta.
As it is.
As a reality, mm-hmm. of a reality. So they develop something to have other nimitta.
So it's their mitta samadhi.
Yeah. People who think they are developing samatha.
This is when they think they're developing samatha, or they're really developing.
They have no understanding.
Yeah.
So even if it is samatha, but it's not
samatha, because it has to be kusala when it's samatha.
When you're talking about when it's wrong understanding,
people
okay,
wrongly think
right, okay,
samatha don't understand about nimitta.
And we mentioned last time about sannyas, the nimitta marker, the mark that is referred to that sannya marks at each moment, like the carpenter on the log, the mark that is marked and that is remembered and is given as the characteristic of the function of sannya to make the mark. Is that mark
the same as nimitta?
It marks what?
It marks
every
whatever is experienced.
Yes. Everything.
Everything. So that
because whenever citta arises, it arises with sanya.
Yes.
So sanya marks whatever is the object.
So it marks whatever is experienced. So can one say the mark of whatever is experienced is the nimitta?
What is sanya?
The marking is sanya, but what is
the mark? It's that which is object,
that
which
is object,
experience.
Yes.
Just to correct, Sarah, I think it's sanya is the nimitta maker, not nimitta marker.
Nimitta maker, yes. Mm. But I think that...
And what is the Pali term for that?
Nimitta karana.
Sanya vipalasa. When it marks wrongly as something, someone, all the time.
Yeah. But actually, at each moment, it's making a sign, or it's remembering even at kusala moments.
As something. When citta takes it for something.
When it takes it for something. So is it
so
only...
So it depends on citta and other cetasikas which arise with that citta.
Yes.
Whether it's wrong or right.
Mm-hmm. So when it's referring to making the mark, the sanya karana...
Of everything.
Everything, not just the vipalasa. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not only of the... nimitta or of the reality, it marks that which it's experienced.
The reason I asked about the mark and nimitta is because I don't have it here, but I think in the Pali when it refers to sanya making the mark at each moment, I think it uses the word nimitta.
I think the sanya just marks when it arises.
Mm.
Could be a different meaning.
But it uses nimitta, yes.
Sanya nimitta. As well, everything is the nimitta.
So maybe a different meaning of nimitta. For example, I at the corner of my eye, there's John sitting there, and I know it's John. It's not seen. I don't have to turn. So maybe nimitta. Due to something that's marked before. Let's say instead, John, I recognize there's a man or woman because of certain nimittas that are marked from before. Is that an example of sanya being, being...
Yeah, and what is this? And what is this?
Same. I mean, okay, if I look at it, then I could say... I might say that it's the sanya is marking again and again.
You don't know what it's called.
But if I recognize it just a short glance, it means it has marked before, and I'm able to recognize it. Sarah brought up the concept sanya being nimitta maker.
I don't mind what word we use, but actually sanya remembers everything which is experienced.
So I'm trying to, and John suggested that maybe there's different meaning of nimitta, and I'm trying to think in terms of the two distinction. As I give the example, I'm seeing a human, someone at the corner of my mind.
So
there is sanya marking the object.
So we have to understand nimitta. Without the paramattha dhamma, can there be nimitta?
No.
So what actually is nimitta?
Nimitta is
the
sign of paramattha
succession of the arising and falling away of only that reality.
Only that reality.
No matter it's sanya or citta or rupa or sound or whatever.
Mm.
It's just that, yeah.
Right.
So when we understand this, that without paramattha dhamma, there cannot be nimitta. That's all. So how come nimitta? Because of citta and all dhamma arises and falls away in split seconds. That's why it makes, or it creates, or it forms up the mark, the sign of something as that, no matter how very small or tiny it is. It is nimitta of that reality, because reality is much more less than that.
And can we talk about this particular function of sanya marking a nimitta in the past, conditioning the thinking about
the past,
what's being experienced now, as in recognizing different people, because nimitta has marked in the past. Sanya has marked in the past. Sanya has marked in the past. And so one meaning of the nimitta is the sign of the reality that's rising and falling away now. And now there's also, because of sanya marked nimittas in the past, there's recognizing this. So can this meaning be what Sarah was bringing? Sanya is the nimitta maker.
It doesn't matter what you say, but sanya has two functions.
Marking and remembering.
Mm-hmm.
One time you mentioned, well, that which arises and falls away forms up the nimitta, and you also mentioned that the nimitta is the arising and falling away is the nimitta itself.
Without reality, there cannot be nimitta.
But the you said the arising and falling away of reality is nimitta, but actually the arising
conditions.
It's just a shorthand.
Yeah. So I think that the citta arises and falls away, the rupa arises and falls away. They do not know about nimitta, that they, because of them, that are nimittas of different things. So we do not make anyone take responsibility for the nimitta at all.
Right.
Yeah.
It just happens.
Yeah.
Would that not be the same thing as saying dhamma? Anicca, dukkha, and anatta, it's because of Dhamma there's, that the characteristic of anicca, dukkha, anatta.
The conditioned reality.
But it's not, it's like, like some people tend to ask then, what is anicca, what is that another reality? But it's actually the reality. Because it's a reality that rises or falls, that there is anicca, dukkha, and anatta.
No, there is anicca of each reality.
Of each reality. Mm-hmm. But we cannot talk about anicca, dukkha, and anatta separate from reality anyway.
So what is anicca?
Anicca because there is Dhamma.
What Dhamma?
Seeing, hearing, smelling.
So all Dhammas, has the characteristic of anicca, dukkha, and anatta.
I'm lost. What was the point I was checking?
All conditioned dhammas have the three characteristics as anicca, dukkha, and anatta.
And actually, because as we said, nimitta is, it's not reality. So when we talk about nimitta being conditioned or formed up, but actually it's not conditioned in the way that reality
we
is.
We talk
so
about reality. Which appears by being nimitta.
Yes, that's all. So the formed up or conditioned isn't like by 24 conditions or anything like that. It just means
and
that it's
the no
way...
And it has no intention to have the nimitta.
It's the way that the reality appears.
Right.
That's
mm-hmm.
No, it's just the way or the sign by which the reality appears.
And do you remember the process now? What is?
Yes, Saturday it's giving time. It's Jonathan.
We don't want to stop.
Oh no, we don't want to stop.
How many Atita Pawanga? Can it be more? Why not?
It's just the marker of Atita Bhavanga. The Chalana Bhavanga, the Atita Bhavanga, the stop, and then the Vita stop, and then the process.
But when Chitta does not experience that object.
Oh, there can be many, many Bhavangas.
And can there be more than one Atita Bhavanga?
Yes, so many Bhavangas in between.
So many Atita Bhavanga or many Bhavangas?
I just say many Bhavangas in between, and then the marker.
Don't mind whether it is Advaita or not.
No, I don't need to pay attention to that. It's like the first Purvanga after the Kripa Chika and the rebirth. Then there's the first one, but after that comes Samana.
Can there be less than 17 moments of experiencing an object?
Yes, there can be a short future course, like a personal deep sleep doesn't.
So when it's short, what is missing?
The person doesn't awake to
experience the. For example, a person in deep sleep didn't hear crashing rain.
But then, if they're in deep sleep, there's no sense or process at all.
No,
so but Ajahn's asking when there are less than 17 cheetahs.
Well, it could be then someone trying to wake someone up, but then they don't awaken. There's some touching. There's something going on there, but it doesn't.
Can there be
the
short process?
Yes.
So it ends up when?
It can end up before the kusala and akusala start. It can just be santirana, the sampatichana. The worthapana.
What comes first?
Sampatichana, receiving. Santirana, then.
After the
and then the wortha. Oh, well, let's say ear, sound. The sound impinges on the ear. The pancha.
The adverting.
Right, the adverting. Yeah.
And then the hearing.
Yeah.
And then
you have the sampatichana, the receiving, and then there's the santirana, the investigating, and then there's the vartapana, determining, or the one that makes way for. Yeah.
Can there be less than 5 javana normally?
Normally
7 or less than 5 normally.
Normally there are 7. In the full there are 7. 7 vidichitas, kusala, akusala, or kirya. And the case of anarahat.
So no one there?
No one there. Just chitta.
No matter when, no one there.
No one there.